Morning, my name is Ian Robertson. I am a principal specialist orthopedic lecturer at Tygerberg Hospital, which is affiliated to Stellenbosch University. My talk today is on femur fractures of the shaft, hip area, as well as dislocations of the hip. What forces displace the femur? In a patient, we have very little control over the distal end, but proximally there are the abductors working on the greater decanter, gluteus, medius and minimus, and to the lesser trochanter comes the iliopsoas, which flexes the hip. So the proximal fragment will go into flexion and abduction. The adductors work distally to a proximal fracture and will pull the distal fragment into adduction. For treatment, what we have to do is basically got no control proximally or very little. Must align the distal end, distal to the fracture, with the proximal stump of the fracture. In other words, in most cases for a proximal femur fracture, if you're treating it conservatively, you will have to align your limb in the Thomas splint or whatever method you're using for your conservative treatment in flexion and abduction. In other words, to get flexion, you'd have to put the Thomas splint as high as possible on the Balkan rahm, on the Balkan frame, and abduct the limb by moving the frame outwards towards the side of the bed. If the limb with the proximal fracture is now in abduction flexion, you will have optimal alignment of the fracture. The femoral shaft fractures basically can be divided into thirds, proximal thirds, mid-shaft and distal thirds. Mid-shaft is usually neutral position. Proximally, you go into flexion and abduction, as I've noted, and distal fractures, which will be the subject of a further lecture, you get basically the gastrocnemius pulls the fragments into posterior angulation. Conservative treatment of a shaft. First of all, you need an adult, we're talking now of the adult, skeletal traction, so put in a Denon pin, I'll come to that later. Skeletal traction uses 10% of body weight. Start with 10%, increase it or decrease it later when you've got x-rays to see the effect of your 10%. Use a Thomas splint. This will have to be suspended in a bed frame called a Balkan frame. Knee physiotherapy will have to be given. And when stable, this takes up to 3 months, mobilize the patient on crutches. In conservative treatment, the patient is placed in a well-fitting Thomas splint. Make sure 2 fingers go under the ring of the Thomas splint. The Thomas splint is a bit longer than the limb. And use a Pearson knee flexion frame in an adult. Then basically the whole contraption is suspended with a weight between the ring and the end of the Thomas splint, with a weight over pulleys in the middle to allow the patient to get onto bedpans, etc. And the longitudinal traction, the ropes from the denim pin now go over the pulley in the Thomas splint, and to this your 10% of body weights are attached. Another method is a static, that's a dynamic traction I've described. The static traction, you basically attach the ropes from the denim pin to the end of the Thomas splint. This will create a groin pressure, and this groin pressure is relieved by a weight from the end of the Thomas splint over the pulley on the Balkan frame. Again, start with 10% of body weight as your initial weights, and titrate these according to how your x-rays appear later. First, get your reduction within the first week if possible. After this, it's very difficult to obtain a reduction just with weights and positioning of the patient. One way to get the patient out early is to use a caster brace or what we call locally a box or snow box plaster. It's basically originated by Sarmiento. It's a cast brace bearing weight on the ischial area. It's a full leg plaster which goes up to the ischial area. It's modeled in a, it's molded in a square box approximately, and the box is made to fit over the plaster in a square position to prevent rotation, and this bears weight on the ischium. Another way is to use a so-called cast brace, which is the same as the box plaster described, except the knee is left free, and the thigh and leg pieces are connected together by means of a commercially available polycentric hinge. This method, at least the knee can be mobilized. Femoral shaft fractures in children. Now, how do we treat children? Children unite quickly and are ideal for conservative treatment in most cases. Children under 12 kilograms are amenable for gallows traction. In the older child, other children can be treated conservatively with Thomas splint, and except here you use skin traction rather than the denim pin. Early mobilization can be achieved by means of a spiker cast, or mobilizing once the patient once his fractures united in the traction on crutches. How does the gallows traction work? Both legs have plaster adhesive trapping applied, and the legs are suspended vertically from a frame, the so-called gallows frame, just enough to allow your fingers, your hand, to pass under the buttocks, so that the hips are now 90 degrees, both the femurs are in traction, and the big problem here is vascular. Make sure, check two or three times a day that the patient isn't getting vascular compromise, because this is the reason why we insist the child weighs less than 12 kilograms. Anything more than this, he's vascular structures will be stretched, and he is in risk of getting gangrene or claudication as a result of the excessive traction. Children, the other children who are too old or too heavy for gallows traction, can be treated in a Thomas splint without the knee piercing knee extension, straight Thomas splint with the elastic strapping attached to the leg distal to the fracture, and this elastic strapping is tied to the end of a well-fitting Thomas splint, and the contraption, the whole Thomas splint suspended again with a rope from the ring end to the distal end and over two pulleys on the Balkan, horizontal part of the Balkan's frame, and these have a weight on it, allowing the child to get onto a bedpan and reposition himself in the bed. A small point is basically the inner, under, outer, over method. The foot tends to go into external rotation. So the positioning of these ropes between the skin traction and the end of the Thomas splint, basically the inner rope goes under the rod of the Thomas splint and the outer one goes over, creating a internal rotation force which counters the natural tendency of the foot to go into external rotation. Other variants on the method of skin traction, this one also uses skeletal traction, is a 90-90 traction. The hip is in 90 degrees, the knee is in 90 degrees. Here you need a skeletal traction. This can be done in the distal femur with a transfixion transfixion wire. Avoid wires in the proximal tibia where the growth plate is irregular and unpredictable. So if you must put a wire in, you rather use it in the distal femur of the child. And with the 90-90 traction, is very good for proximal femur fractures because you get good flexion of the limb. And remember I told you that the proximal end of the femur goes into flexion always. So more proximal, the more flexion. The 90-90 method is well tolerated in children. where the knee is in 90 degrees, where the hip is in 90 degrees, the lower leg is in a sling, and the length traction is basically vertical from a pulley on the Thomas splint. It's not well tolerated in adults. It's a method for children only. Indications for open reduction internal fixation. When do we do internal fixation? On a femur fracture or any fracture? This is a general principle I'm now telling you. The inability to obtain a reduction is the most important. Inability to maintain the reduction. Vascular injury, pathological fractures such as a metastasis, interarticular fractures, especially if there's a more than 1 or 2 millimeters step in the joint, and relative indications of the multi-trauma patient and the aged patient. Surgical treatment of femur shaft fractures. These days, the majority of cases in adults are treated by closed intramedullary nailing. A nail is placed in the femur shaft over a guide wire which is put in under fluoroscopy. The shaft is reamed and rotation prevented is prevented by means of 2 screws proximally and distally that go through the pin to prevent rotation and also maintain length. There are fewer mechanical fractures than mechanical failures of the apparatus or the implant than with older methods such as plating and screws. When the fracture is very proximal, such as subtrochanteric area, a pin with a screw going into the femur neck is required. It's an intermedullary pin with a screw in the ridge region of the femur neck and head is required if the fracture is in the subtrochanteric region to prevent rotation and angulation of the proximal fragment. Other alternatives to open reduction internal fixation are plates and screws, rarely used in adults these days because they have a tendency to break and have a higher incidence of sepsis, can still be used in children however, and multiple pins such as ender pins or flexible titanium intermedullary rods, which is a good method in the older child. External fixators as a rule are to be avoided in the femur because there's a deep muscle layer and the tract between the skin and the bone doesn't seal off as well as it does in the tibial region and other subcutaneous bones, leading to sepsis and definitely leading to tethering of muscles and an inability to use the limb or flex the knee. Complications of open reduction internal fixation. Intermedullary pins can fail. They can get fatigue fractures in them. If the patient's involved in another accident, they can bend and makes removing a pin after it's bent a very difficult procedure. Plates and screws can tear out of the screws and they can fatigue and break. Screws alone are not a good method of treating any shaft fracture. They will tear out. Other general complications are deep venous thrombosis from all the sepsis and resulting stasis, leading to maybe pulmonary embolus. Patient is mobilized as soon as possible. Often other orthotic method may be required. It's usually discharged on crutches, non-weight bearing, even after intermedullary nailing. Do not full weight bear for several months. Discharge the patient on crutches, and on rare occasions where a stable situation has not been achieved, a lace-up caliper may be required. Next subject I'd like to discuss are dislocations of the hip. These are medical emergencies which every competent practitioner should know how to treat, especially during your junior years as a doctor. You will probably work at your rural hospitals, and dislocations are not of the hip are not that rare and must be identified and treated, preferably before referral, especially if you're far away from help. Causes are low energy, usually these days high energy, involving a motor accident. Chinton's line. Did you appreciate Chinton's line? You just know what a Gothic arch is. These are graceful, one of the type of architectural arches, often seen in old churches along the Gothic style. Now, what is Chinton's line of the hip? If you know this, you'll be able to recognize the dislocation. Chinton's line is a line between the inferior border of the neck and the superior pubic ramus. It makes a graceful arch, as in a Gothic arch. If Chinton's line is broken, it means there's either a femur neck fracture or there's a dislocation. What is the position of the limb after the common posterior dislocation of the hip? This is a thing you mustn't miss, and basically the hip is adducted, is an internal rotation and flexion with shortening. The hip does not abduct freely and is stiff. It's easy to recognize in an isolated case, but together with a femur fracture, very difficult to make the diagnosis. So make sure that always with a femur fracture, especially in the head injured patient, you also have a picture of the pelvis, which will show the hip. Check that the hip is not dislocated in all femur fractures. X-ray signs of a posterior dislocation. Chinton's line, as we mentioned before, is broken. The hip is in adduction, internal rotation, and is shortened. The anterior dislocation of the hip, which is a rare dislocation, the hip is in exactly the opposite position. Its abductors externally rotated and shortened. And usually on the X-ray, in an anterior dislocation, the hip is, the femur head is below the acetabulum. In a anterior dislocation, is above the acetabulum. Look at this lesser trochanter. If it is not visible, the hip is in internal rotation, it's probably a posterior dislocation. If the lesser trochanter is easily visible, it is probably, the foot is in external rotation, and it is probably an anterior dislocation. Treatment of a posterior dislocation. As I said, I think every doctor should be able to do this. It is not difficult, and if you have not got the muscle power, there's always help such as porters, etc., available in the hospital to help you with the raw muscle power. This is an emergency. Get up at night, get your general anaesthetist out, and tell him to use a muscle relaxant. This is a fracture which can be treated on the floor to give you more, it can make manipulation easier. First, pull in the length of the femur, where the femur is supposed to be at the patient, in the length of the patient. This will get the femur head below the acetabulum. Then you flex the hip 90 degrees, flex the knee 90 degrees, and pull towards the ceiling. You usually feel a definite click, and the hip will now move freely, and the internal rotation will now be normal physiological external rotation. Post-operative, the patient will need bed rest for 3 to 6 weeks with skeletal traction or skin traction. Treatment of the anterior dislocation is a little bit more difficult. Have an assistant. The assistant's aim is to distract the hip laterally. So he either pulls with his clasped hands in the lateral direction while you try and manipulate the limb into internal rotation. You have to pull so much because remember it's an acetabular fossa, you can even press a bit and disimpact the hip basically, and usually with success you'll feel a loud click and the limb will lie neutrally. Check with a post-operative X-ray that you've achieved reduction. Complications of dislocations. Sciatic nerve, especially with posterior dislocations, can have fallout, especially a dropped foot. Check for this. thrombosis from an anterior dislocation can lead to deep venous thrombosis. Remember associated fractures. I think the principle is note the fractures while the hip is dislocated, but try and reduce it whatever. Fractures can be of the head itself or of the posterior acetabulum. Once you have reduced the fracture, these posterior fragments can be identified on a CT scan and reduced. At this stage, you can refer the patient to an outside center, another tertiary care center, if these fractures dislocated. I think the primary reduction of the hip, especially in a South African situation, in a rural setting, is that the doctor who sees the patient must try and do the operation if it's more than a few hours ambulance ride to a other center. Late complications include avascular necrosis of the femur head and osteoarthritis in about 40% of cases. Avascular necrosis will present within 2 years with pain in the hip. Remember, if the pain doesn't clear up on follow-up, suspect avascular necrosis, and later it will become radiologically evident with a segmental collapse of the head with retention of joint cartilage. Osteoarthritis will be seen in 40% of cases. Never forget the fracture dislocation. Fracture of a femur, known fracture of femur, it's easy to pick this up, but often the fracture of the hip, it can be overlooked. It's not clinically easy if you've got a floppy thigh because of a broken femur to feel that the hip is dislocated. So basically an AP of the pelvis is mandatory. They'd say 10% of femur fractures have dislocations of the hip. Prognosis. AVN can be expected to occur in about 5% of cases. Early mobilization, early reduction is important. This is the one thing you've got control of. Reduce the dislocated hip early. Get up in the night and do it. Don't wait till the next morning, because every hour the hip is dislocated increases the chance of AVN. Over the other factors, you have little control. Osteoarthritis is more to do with the degree of trauma, how many concomitant fractures of the acetabulum or femur head were present, and more to do with the velocity of the trauma. What about hip fractures now? This is a problem of the elderly. The so-called hip or proximal femur fractures, intercapsular and extracapsular. You just know where the hip capsule joins on. Anything inside the capsule between the intertrochanteric line and the acetabulum is an intracapsular fracture. Base and neck is regarded as an extracapsular. Extracapsular fractures are between the greater and lesser trochanter. They may have a subtrochanteric element as well. Extracapsular fractures, usually in the older patient, but in the younger patient they can also occur, usually together with multi-trauma. There's a good blood supply to this sponge bone. No vascular necrosis will occur. They will tend to unite, but in varus, if treated conservatively. So the best treatment is basically some sort of sliding screw. Sliding screw allows the femur head and neck to collapse and compress on the fracture line. Remember the treatment of the patient themselves. Rehydrate the patient, elevate the foot of the bed, make sure they're fit for operation. Post-operatively, do something about deep venous thrombosis, such as early mobilization, thromboembolic stockings, and subcutaneous heparin, and lots of fluids. Intracapsular fractures are very common in the very elderly, the 70-plus. There's a poor blood supply, because remember the femur neck, the femur head gets its main blood supply through the retinacular blood vessels, which are on the femur neck. These are torn in a displaced fracture. A non-union is common if no internal fixation is done. The treatment of these intracapsular fractures depends on the age of the patient. If the patient is less than 55 years old, which is a rarity, usually if it's a multi-trauma patient who is involved in massive trauma, then do open adduction internal fixation with multiple cannulated screws, or maybe even a sliding screw plus another screw to prevent rotation. The very old patient, the unfit, who probably in your estimation got less than 5 years survival, usually the housebound patient, 70 euros plus, do a hemiarthroplasty, such as the Moore's prosthesis. Smaller operation than total hip. In the grey zone, between 60 and 70, the active, very elderly patient, if they live wire and walk a lot, and you get a history that they will appreciate a good hip, and they fit enough to take a little bit of a bigger anesthetic, and the risks of bone cement and other risk factors, you can do a total hip replacement. Other words, to sum up, less than 55 years of age, open adduction internal fixation. The elderly, 70 or 80 years old, who are just community walkers, get a hemiarthroplasty. And the majority of cases these days are between the two age extremes I've mentioned, and a total hip replacement is required. The aim of in all these fractures, especially the hip patients, is to mobilize the patient as soon as possible with early open reduction and mobilization. This will prevent deep venous thrombosis and all the other complications of lying in a bed. Thank you.